Hello and welcome to Front and Nationwide. This is the Athletics dedicated Blue Jackets podcast. Aaron Portzein with you on a whatever the hell day this is between Christmas and New Year. Allison Lucan is here.
Days are irrelevant. Every day I say hello.
It is kind of like that. However, Allison,
yes,
Sunday has meaning.
It does.
In Blue Jackets land. Training it camp. Yeah, the beginning of training camp, sort of the physicals. They're on the ice Monday. Not that that makes a hoot of difference because ain't nobody going getting in to watch them, such is the time. But there's some news. The league is starting to come to life here with the anticipation of a January 13 opening day around the league, January 14th for the Blue Jackets in Nashville. And the Blue Jackets, as we said, start training camp in just a few days. So it's going to be a training camp, Allison, that's really, we've said this probably 3,000 times since March. This is not going to be like any other, experience we've had. This time it's training camp's opportunity to live up to that. It's not really going to be a training camp. It's sort of going to be like a trajectory camp. Just get up and going to the regular season. There's no exhibition games. There's not going to be two days of boring skate tests. There's not going to be a 2-mile run. We're not going to be banging on the PR guys for tomorrow's roster in Pittsburgh and that kind of stuff. It's just going to be totally different. I suppose we should be used to different by now, but tell me what you make of this 10 to 11 day quote unquote camp that they're going to have and how they need to run this thing so that guys are prepared, but guys are not beat up before this thing even gets started.
Yeah. I mean, I would say that Nelson Iott, who is the high performance director, is going to be heavily involved in making sure that the workload is managed, that everything is ready physically and not overburdened, but they're not going to, I think it's going to be kind of like the final fun days because we know there's going to be two groups, but the competition is going to be instant. We're not going to have the ramp up of the energy from the team either, I don't think, where they kind of ease into it because they know they're going to work, but you know.
Yeah, I think if you're John Tortorella, a camp like this, well, it's going to bother you. It's not going to feel natural for him. It's going to irritate him because he feels like part of camp is that sort of mental testing, the can you get through it, almost breaking them down to build them back up again. That's just not possible this time. But I've been thinking about this. I think a camp like this for him in Columbus 4 years ago would have been much more difficult. I think there's a understanding among these players and this coach of what is expected. In other words, I think these guys are sort of more naturally on the same page, if that's a way to say it. You know what I'm getting at?
Totally. I mean, this is a group, I think that there's no real surprises here, right? And I think that this is a group that's probably excited above and beyond the usual because they know that they are probably going to get to play a little bit differently this year. So I think that's probably going to be an incentive too. So this is a group that we're all going to find out if a shorter camp hurts or helps clubs, but this is a group that I think isn't necessarily going to be hurt by not having as much time as they quote unquote usually do.
Yeah. And if you look around the league, I think this team is probably the core of this team has probably been together as long as maybe more than most teams. This is not a getting to know you necessarily other than a couple of big spots. Obviously, you know, Max Domi's going to need some time to get acclimated. Mikko Koivu, they're breaking in a couple of new centermen. But, you know, we're looking at 12, 15 guys that really know the expectations here and frankly are able to set themselves to the expectations without having to be reminded of it all the time, which I think is a different sort of setup than John Tortorella had when he first got here. At least he feels like it is.
Right.
So still there are some big issues heading into this training camp. I think what's different about this too is without playing exhibition games, without having, you know, so long to move people around into different lines and give different looks, we're not going to have maybe answers to some of our questions at the end of this camp. Some of these questions may go into the regular season before you have an answer for them. But let's discuss some of the large issues around this team. The first thing that's starting to become, I mean, we've been told repeatedly for months now that the Dubois situation isn't a big deal. And to be clear, it isn't yet. They're not late yet. But it's getting down now to the hours where when camp starts on Sunday, if Pierre-Luc Dubois is not signed by then, the club has historically taken a different tone with the player. And they've used that start of camp as, I don't want to say a threat, but it's kind of been that. No ultimatums for these things. They still have Dubois' rights. They will into the season. But they want to get this guy signed. He's already here in Columbus. All systems point to go. But until it's done, it's not done. I'm of the school, Allison, you probably have heard this too many times from me, but there's really no sense in worrying about it if you're a Blue Jackets fan, because it's not going to change a damn thing. But at this point, how concerning is it to you, or should it be, if that Pierre-Luc is not done yet? Does optimism still prevail?
Yeah, I mean, I think that for all the reasons you said, this will get done. There's, to varying degrees, particularly this year, there's no sense in overly stressing about things we can't control. And fans are certainly not going to impact contract negotiations. I just think that it's a shame that this organization seems to keep getting into this situation. I think everyone would be thrilled if this trend stopped, versus particularly for you know, talent like we've discussed, and then you mentioned in your piece, you know, Ryan Johansson, Josh Anderson. Now we're talking about this with Pierre-Luc Dubois. These are players that I think you want to make sure have a great long-standing relationship with the organization, regardless of what happens. And I don't know, this, at least on the surface, this doesn't always feel like the most comfortable way to go about that.
Yeah. I wonder how much Wennberg scares them. And I don't mean them, meaning Kekalainen just alone, because he's not right. Working alone. He has a boss, and right. The boss is the guy that pays the money. How much do you think Wennberg scares the boss?
Well, I mean, here's the thing. If they didn't learn from that, that's a shame. But I think that any organization, it's been long enough that hopefully they've refined their methods of analyses and how they make these decisions. And as much as that's a misstep, I'm sure, in their eyes, that shouldn't color every future negotiation till the end of time. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Sure. That one's fresh, though.
Yeah, it is. It is.
Because the buyout just went through. And I'm sure when they go to management with the offer to Wennberg 3 years ago, it was, this guy just had 59 points. I mean, he's a number one center. Look at him. He's a budding number one center. Now, these two players are not at all alike. I think there are elements of Dubois' game that if he's not producing and not, you know, I guess I should say that, because Wennberg gave you a pretty good checking forward even when he wasn't producing. But I'm sure the way they sell signing Dubois to a big ticket sounds a lot to ownership like it did when they sold Wennberg, and no one could have seen Wenberg's demise coming. At least I'm not smart enough to say I saw it coming. There's risk. There's risk with all of these. But you're right. It's kind of a broken record in Columbus. Top player, RFA, really hard getting him signed. You just hope for the sake of both parties that something gets done quickly and amiably. It's, so far, it's been nothing but professional. Pat Brisson is the super agent of the NHL right now. He deals with this stuff all the time. You'd hate to see another commodity, another great player reach a point of frustration with the organization and vice versa if it continues to go.
100% agree.
That's the rough part. So here's some trickier stuff. We've been saying all along, and here's our second topic. I don't know if you saw theathletic.com today. We have a story posted about the big questions that are surrounding the Blue Jackets as they go into this training camp starting Sunday on ice Monday. The moment that trade was made for Montreal, we said Max Domi, number two line center. He's going to get Atkinson on that, on his right wing. We'll see who he gets on the left wing. The more you think about it, if you're Max Domi, you're probably reading all the clips or looking at the clips, or maybe you're not. You're hearing all the talk about how you're going to be the number two center in Ohio. And if this kid is wired the way I think he's wired, he's probably going, number two center?
Yeah.
Really? Seriously? Like, hey, nothing against Pierre-Luc Dubois. Love the kid. Kid battles his ass off. He's got first center pedigree for sure. But are you sure I'm the number two center?
Right.
I don't think he just accepts that. I know John Tortorella is not just saying it's Pierre-Luc Dubois' job and Max Domi can get no higher than number two. Max Domi's had a season just 1 year ago, 28-44-72 for the Canadiens. Pierre-Luc Dubois has never reached those numbers, any of them. So what are we looking at down the middle? I think it's perfectly healthy, by the way, if Pierre-Luc Dubois is not sure if he's the number one center. I think it's perfectly healthy if Max Domi does not accept that he's the number two center and not the number one. I think it's perfectly healthy if it goes back and forth, kind of like the goaltenders throughout the season, where who's ever going and whatever line makes sense is the number one line, and the ice time will be doled out accordingly. Your thoughts on this, and maybe if that number one and number two center competition is more up for grabs than we think it is.
Well, I think we have a new term. We can call this battle the Dumois battle.
Where did that come from?
Dumois. Well, you put them together. You put them together. I like it.
Did I? Dubois and Domi? Yeah.
See? No, but I agree with you. I mean, I've said this before. I'll say it again. I think we saw in the postseason that John Tortorella was actually onto something, that this is a player that responds to being challenged. I think that's a great characteristic for a professional athlete in that context. We have seen that when this player is truly at his best, it's a whole nother level. And I think there's no better way to spur on both of those things than to have a player like Max Domi, who isn't going to accept a second line assignment straight out of the bat. And I also agree ultimately that particularly for this team where we talk about they always need to get some more offense, more offense, more offense. If you're looking at a very fluid top six, I think that's the best problem in the world to have, particularly in a compressed schedule. Like you said, we talk about that benefit with the goaltenders. Think about having depth down the middle like this, with the schedule being like it's going to be.
Yeah, right.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And I think if you assume, as Tortorella has suggested, that Cam Atkinson's going to play next to Max Domi, that's his name, and you read Cam Atkinson's quotes from earlier this week, that doesn't sound like a player that's accepting that he's a second line right winger either, if you know what I mean.
Totally.
I mean, I think both of those guys, and to your point, I think it's perfectly fine if you go into a game in this season and you don't really know which top forward line is going to get the bulk of your work, that it might be matchups. It might be who you want Dubois checking on the other team. It might be which line is going more. I tell you, if you're Columbus and you're the Blue Jackets, you just want two lines going offensively.
Right.
You mentioned how Dubois takes it to a different level when he's challenged. And I think you see it. Yeah, it's visible. You could see it in the playoffs after the tête-à-tête with Tortorella on the bench, you could see just the blowback from Dubois that was amazing. And really, if you look at this team's depth chart the last 2 years, again, with Wenberg, he's out of town. We should stop talking about him at some point. But there hasn't been much push from behind. Someone's going to take Dubois' ice time from him.
Right.
Like, there just hasn't been that challenge in the room. And I think Dubois can be better for it. He may not like it or welcome it, but I think he'll recognize that he needs that as much as anybody does. It's just a fact of life. It's nothing specific to that kid. So we watch Dubois, we watch Domi, and we see which of those lines is firing and which one Tortorella may lean on in games when it's 5-on-5, when he needs a goal, when he's looking to shut teams down. It'll be fascinating to see which line he comes to count on. Another topic here for the Blue Jackets entering camp: Alexander Texier and Emil Bemström. Will they be ready for bigger roles? So here we sit 4 days before camp opens. Gustav Nyquist is out long term after having shoulder surgery, only making bigger, I think, the Blue Jackets need for proven offensive firepower. And you've seen the last few free agents that were on the board tick off. Mike Hoffman signs a PTO. Soon it'll be a contract with the Blues. Athanasiou signed. There were others that you sort of kicked around as maybe the Blue Jackets could get some help in free agency. They weren't really that excited about any of those guys. Were they going to get a player cast off from as a cap casualty? Well, no, the Lightning managed to figure out their stuff without getting rid of anybody. So, nobody looked at their situation and said, we're in bad shape. We need to get rid of a really good player. Let's call Columbus. And it never works that way. It hasn't yet. It didn't again this offseason. Maybe there's still a few days for something to come down. We'll see. But as it stands, Allison, it sure looks like they just, and it's not fair to these young players, perhaps, but I don't think they can wait any longer for Texier or Bemström to be significant offensive impact players. They need those guys now to make a push. This will be their second full seasons in the NHL. I think there have been glimmers of flickers of brightness for both of them at times. But those guys, I mean, we're talking about a guy, Texier, who's on the number one line right now, or whatever that is, with Dubois and Bjorkstrand. We're talking about Bemström, who's probably going to get power play time, and John Tortorella wants to give him a regular shift in the top nine. Those guys have to produce. It can't just be good guys who are going to be really good in a few years. They almost need something special from them now.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And, again, I'm certainly not better than either player, but for me, I have a little bit more confidence in Texier than Bemström. I just think that we have to remember that Texier was out for a huge chunk of the season with an injury that develops over time, which would lead me to believe he probably wasn't at 100% for a good chunk of time before he ended up coming out of the lineup to heal. So yeah. I liked what I saw from the player. I really liked what I saw from him in the postseason. I like the little bit of chip that he brings as well. I don't think he's going to be, the top goal scorer, but I think he's going to be part of creating chances and frustrating opponents. Bemström, I might be with John Tortorella on this one a little bit more in that, I'd love to see this kid put it together. But I think he's really going to have the biggest challenge in front of him for sure. He was still putting the pieces together last season. He's had a nice swing of play overseas. And maybe that's helped him put some of these pieces together. But, it's even when you look at the lineup, this is a guy who might not be in every night with all the forwards that they have to juggle. So that's one that I'm going to be a little bit more curious about to see if we can erase the question marks there.
Yeah. And I look at it like Texier, I'm very hopeful that he's going to be a hell of a player. He is. I you can feel that. But I look at him right now and I think of him playing on a number one line. And man, that is the high rent district in the National Hockey League.
Mm-hmm.
Like the, now he brings an element to that line for sure. The guy can pass the puck. He's got great vision. But if you are a team that is a playoff contender, that guy has to become a real impact player. That at that point in the lineup, you can't just have a placeholder or a guy that's going to be and is working out the kinks if you think you're a team that's ready to win.
Right.
So I think there's a lot of pressure there on him to produce. And I don't know who goes in there if he's not. Bemstrom, I thought, you know, there are a lot of years where if you look back on the Blue Jackets rookies, you would be delighted that one of them had 10 goals. It was a quiet 10 goals for Bemstrom.
Yeah.
And mostly because he came billed as this player with the big one-timer, and he scored 10 goals despite not really having the one-timer going.
Right.
And I don't know what that is. I can assume it's stage fright. It's getting adjusted to a much more difficult league. I don't know where he fits. Like, even as we talk right now, you're looking at Texier on the top line, which I think some people will roll their eyes at. You and I sort of have an appreciation for the player. I haven't seen him up close, but I'm not sure what you do with Bemstrom.
Yeah.
Like, Jenner, Koivu, Bemstrom doesn't seem like a line to me.
Right.
Do you put him on the left side with Domi and Atkinson? That seems...
That seems a little rich. Yeah, that seems rich.
Yeah, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But I don't want him on the fourth line either, chucking away like he did last year, because that's not what he's here to do.
Right.
So I'm a little curious about how that's going to work with him. Any thoughts there?
I mean, this is where some years we've had lines where we just call them like the line of misfit toys. I think this might be the bigger root question for Bemstrom is that, can he earn his way into the role that he should be playing? Because if he can't, then he really, I don't want to say can't or shouldn't, but isn't in the lineup because he doesn't fit anywhere else.
That's right.
And, you know, I feel like, and we commented on this last season when we'd watch him play, it felt like he still thought he had time to think or to make a move before he actually needed to be making it.
Yeah,
it was that speed of the game. And I think he's more than capable, but it's putting that together and adapting. And if he can do that, then you know, maybe he is challenging for a top six spot with that, you know, special teams contribution as well. But this isn't a guy that can kind of languish in the bottom six, particularly with the other pieces that this organization currently has. With a different roster, maybe, but not with this roster.
Yeah. And am I right to say, if you're a Blue Jackets fan, this is kind of disappointing? That, and nothing against these two guys, I think they're both NHL players. I do, and I think they're going to be both really good NHL players. They might be that this year, but it just feels, if you're the Blue Jackets, a little disappointing to be having these same conversations almost that you had last year about these. And again, this isn't about the two players. It's about where they fit and how important they are to this team. Because the team hasn't done something to strengthen itself offensively, where these guys, what they give you is you're expecting them to play well, but what they give you offensively is almost a bonus sometimes. No, they're needed again. And that's a risky way to go about playing, I think, especially if you think you're a team that can do some damage in the playoffs. Do you have anything to say there?
No, I think that's the root of the root. And people who've been around for a while remember when this organization had a notorious problem for having to rush. I mean, think back to Derek Brassard playing. Think back to those early days when guys were up in the big leagues before maybe they should be. And I don't think that's the situation here. It's not a rush, but it's building a place for these players to adjust the right way, given where they are in their development. And this whole season, PS has obviously thrown like massive wrenches in all of that. So,
Yeah. A wild card in all of this is Mikhail Grigorenko.
Yes.
And this is one of our questions for camp as well. what do they do with this guy? Because he can do, he can play all three positions, mostly right wing and center. He can play left wing as well. And if you listen to John Tortorella, he may get a shot in what I think we've assumed would be Foligno's spot with Nyquist on the mend with Domi and Atkinson. That Grigorenko may get a look up there. If he doesn't get a look up there, then I think you put him next to Jenner and Koivu, but that isn't ideal, almost in the way that it's not ideal for Bemstrom to play there. And he sure isn't a fourth liner either. Mm-hmm. Now, again, we must say, when I say fourth liner, I guess part of me is thinking back to the way fourth lines used to be constructed.
Right.
And in Columbus, a lot of times it's been that which does not fit anywhere else. You guys go play together. Nasher will make it work between the two of you.
Right.
I'm interested to see what he can give. I'm interested to see his level of desperation now. After 3 years in Russia, he wants to be back in the NHL again. I'm very, very interested to see what becomes of him and what sort of opportunities, Allison, he gets.
Yeah, and you know, this is a situation where I honestly have no thoughts because we don't know what this player is. We just don't know. And to your point, we can think back to, oh gosh, all the years, time is irrelevant. But when Sam Gagner was here, I mean, you can have a super effective fourth line, to your point.
Absolutely.
You can give that an identity that is powerful and very meaningful to your team. But I need to see this player in the NHL. I need to see him interact with the team. And I will hold my comments until that time.
Yeah. I mean, I want to see what kind of player he is. He's a skilled player who, frankly, worked his way out of the league because he wasn't regarded as a relentlessly hard worker. So skill, but not enough production for top six. And not enough compete for bottom six.
Right.
So how has he identified himself since then? He has three really, really good years in Russia with a really good team, CSKA Moscow. And by all accounts, is a hell of a good dude. He's been in Columbus now for several months. His kids are playing local hockey. He wants to make this work.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's going to be a fascinating. Does he just plug in and move up and down? You mentioned Gagner. Gagner did that where he'd start on the fourth line and then play power play and move up to the second line. I think Tortorella would love to have a guy like that. But with Gagner came incredible production too.
Right.
I mean, the power, God, he was amazing. I'll never forget that pass in Dallas on the power play. Third defensive pair is a question mark. Now, that may seem petty most years. Like, who's the third string goalie, what's the fourth forward line look like? Don't you have bigger concerns? Maybe it's a pretty good situation when this is a concern. But if you're the Blue Jackets, or if you're of any team, really, you're going to be playing basically every other night once this thing starts. And so I don't think you can just hide your third defensive pair. It's got to be a couple that you count on, I think, for 14 plus 16 minutes a night, ideally. Ryan Murray's gone. Marcus Nuttavaara is gone. We know who the top four is, but that leaves them with some combination of Kukan, Peak, Harrington, Gabriel. I should give their first names. Dean Kukan, who's been here in and out for a few years now, looks to be a regular now. I think he's a likely candidate to play regularly. They're high on Andrew Peak, the draft pick out of Notre Dame, who played more last year than they anticipated. Looked pretty good. Allison, Scott Harrington, it seems like he's been around here as long as Stinger. and he's here. He's still the number seven guy, probably. They like him. They like him in the regular season. They play him in the regular season. And Gabriel Carlson, who had a hot start, drifted away for a couple of years, now looks like they loved his game last year in the AHL. They think he's a candidate to play there as well. Two other names to keep in mind. Adam Clendenning, who has a one-way contract. It's $700,000. Hell, some guys make that in the AHL anyways. So setting him down is not a big deal. But he'll make as much in the AHL as he does in the NHL, no matter where he plays. And they just signed Michael Delzato to a PTO, which is a really interesting move to me. And maybe we can get into him a little bit in depth after this. But when you look at that Blue Jackets defensive group, you see Werenski, you see Jones, you see Gavrikov, you see Savard. What makes sense to you on the third pair, and how crucial is that pairing for them over the life of the season?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's crucial for the reasons you said. We saw this group just get taxed physically, because no matter how good a shape you're in, when you play 18,000 overtimes in a week and a half, you're going to be tired. But yeah. We saw this group just get worn down, and Seth Jones and Zach Werenski cannot be playing 30 minutes a game night in and night out with this schedule. So you need a solid defense. This isn't as much of a question mark for me in terms of the total six. I'm with Kukan. I think that Peak impressed me last year. I was pleasantly surprised with what he could do. And remember, he didn't lose his spot in the lineup. He got broken like every other player on this team. So, I think that's who gets the look. I think what's more interesting, Scott Harrington will obviously be around, is how they might support their defense on the taxi squad, because we now know the AHL is going to try and have a season as well starting February 5. Mm-hmm. And if they want Carlson playing, because your taxi squad cannot go back to the AHL. So to me now, this leans a little more to a player like Clendenning, who, if we recall, I was surprised that we didn't see him in Columbus more last year, particularly given the injuries. And this was a player who was a really nice piece in the 2 years ago playoffs. He's constantly been a tweener player in this league. But that's where I start to think you'll see him more than maybe a Carlson, because of what this taxi squad looks like. That'll be the more interesting decision for me on the back end.
Yeah, and I think Adam Clendenning is a guy you're more comfortable with not playing.
Exactly. Exactly.
Then Carlson. Carlson's still young enough. You want him playing.
Exactly.
Yeah. Delzato's really interesting to me, and people get too excited about PTOs sometimes. I feel like this one's different because I'm not sure they know what they've got yet with a Kukan Peak pairing. I think both of those guys have shown well at times by themselves. I think it's a different animal when they start to play together for a month. 6 weeks, and again, they have to play him. It's not going to be 30-plus for the top pair and 25 for the second pair, which just leaves scraps for the other guys. They're going to have to play. I like the idea, too, for a team like this Blue Jackets team that John Tortorella is basically saying, yeah, Domi changes us offensively, but the other change for us is going to be that we're just going to think more offensively. And you're wondering, like, can the guys just hit that switch? Can they just think that way? Well, Delzato doesn't have a switch. Like, you can't turn that off of him. He is wired that way. Mm-hmm. And I think Tortorella likes that. I think there's a little Nudavara, honestly, in Delzato. I don't think he's as polished defensively as Nudavara is. But Delzato is a go, go, go guy. And I think Tortorella may fancy that. He could end up as a second power play unit for this team too. I think he's the guy you stick on your taxi squad and you feel better about, as you said, Allison, than Carlson sitting.
Yeah. I mean, I do tend to be the person that says, don't get too excited about PTOs. So I mean, it could happen. I'm maybe not as high on it as you are, just because I just tend not to get too excited about PTOs. We'll see. We'll see what he brings in camp. He's hopped around a bit. He's been somewhat steady, played second pair minutes in Anaheim, but that was a struggling squad. So this is another player where I just have to see what camp brings, and then I'll have an opinion.
Yay, camp. Camp is almost here, Allison.
It's true. A couple days.
Ready for the Zoom meetings again with... Torts loves the Zoom. Loves the Zoom. Many of you are listening this week, and you're probably thinking, they better get to that damn John Denver story that Allison's been sitting on for a week now. We teased to it. Thousands upon thousands of people said, I'm tuning in next week because I want you to tell that story.
How many did? Allison. How many did?
Well, if you multiply the Twitter people by a few. Allison, here's your chance. It's a great story. You've told it to me 30 times because every time I say, this is my friend Allison. Hey, tell him your John Denver story. And you go, oh, God. And I did it to you on the podcast. And so now you have no choice but to live up to it.
Yes.
Set the scene. Tell us the John Denver story. And I'll ask questions along the way if I feel like I have a question about something.
If you feel like you do. Okay, perfect. Well, so when I was little, John Denver was the music that we listened to in our family. Love yes. John Denver. Love John Denver and the Muppets A Christmas Together. Best Christmas album Heck ever. Yeah. Love John Denver, everything about him. And my dad used to have to go to this conference that was in Aspen. And we would go every winter. And this was back when Aspen was just this little ski town. You had to fly this little tiny prop plane in. It was terrifying.
We're talking 80s.
Yes, we're talking a while ago. And John Denver lived in Aspen. He was part of what kind of, at the time, put Aspen on the map. Because John Denver lived in Aspen. And it was, again, a small town, so it would just so happen that there was a 3-4 year stretch there where every year when we were in Aspen, we would run into John Denver. We ran into him one time in a grocery store, whatever. And, here I am, this little person, and I'm like, oh, John Denver, I love you. Da, 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 da. He was always so kind, always so generous. So our family tradition was that the last night we were in Aspen, we would go to at the time, the one nice restaurant in town. It was called Arthur's. It was an Asian restaurant. It was delicious. And we were in Arthur's this particular year. I think I might have been 5 or 6. I don't know. And into Arthur's walks John Denver and his wife, Annie, who everyone knows inspired the best song ever. Oh, Annie's song.
Annie's song.
Annie's yes. song. So in comes John Denver and Annie, and I say to my parents, I'm going to go say hi to my good friend, John Denver. So I get up, do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do, walk over to the table to say hi to my good friend, John Denver. So I come back to my parents.
Now, yes. John Denver couldn't have been more gracious, I assume.
Of course.
Lovely. Did he have the round, the perfectly round glasses on?
Of course. Of course he did.
Okay.
He stopped wearing those after a while, and it was disappointing to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know. So then... come back to my parents, do. And I don't even know if kids still do this, but we'd get school pictures and you'd cut them up and had them. Oh, there you go. My parents always had some in their purse or my dad in his wallet, whatever. And so I say, Mom, do you have one of my school pictures? She says, I do. I said, do you have a pen? And she said, yes. And I said, I'm going to go take one to John Denver. Walk over to John Denver, visit with him a few more minutes. Come back, sit down. And my mom says, well, Allison, where's the picture? Did you get his autograph? And I said, no, Mom, I gave him mine. So I autographed my school picture and gave it to John Denver. And that is the John Denver story. People who know me well are not surprised by this story at all.
And he took, do you even remember the response to him taking the picture? Was there?
I do not remember.
Yeah.
But my husband loves to tease that it was probably his most cherished possession that he kept. And just like everyone asks me to tell this story, that people always ask John Denver to tell the story about the little girl that gave him her autograph. That's his his favorite joke.
It had to be on his refrigerator.
I don't know that I'd be that confident.
No, but you know what? People like that, I think everybody feels like they know John Denver. He's one of those guys.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Or at least they know that he would be so gracious and so good about something like this.
Yes.
I think a person like that is probably so used to signing the autograph and doing the favor that a little kid doing that to him would probably be the greatest.
I'm sure it was something.
The greatest. And I'm sure, I bet he remembered it, you know?
Well, you and my husband have the same perspective on the whole thing.
Yeah. Henry John Duchendorf Jr., by the way. John Denver.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Well, there you have it, folks, the John Denver story. You're not going to hear a better story than that on this podcast.
Well, that's a shame.
We have peaked on 12/30/2020. Hey, happy new year, everybody. Thanks for sticking with us. These have been trying times for everybody. It feels like there's a light at the end of the tunnel. It's a ways away, but the season's starting back up again. I believe there's going to be hockey. They're sure going to try. It sure looks like it. And we're going to keep doing our best. We're going to pick up with two podcasts a week starting next week. And because the games and the news is going to start flying fast and furious now. So happy new year to you. Hope you get everything you want in the new year. Hope you can kiss 2020 goodbye with whichever profanity you choose. Allison, anything to add before we sign off here?
Just Ohio State women return to the ice January 1. So college hockey is going to try and get back at it too. And just as Aaron did, I wish everyone a fantastic new year. Let's hope for the fact that we're all on the upswing and whatever that means to you and your loved ones.
Exactly. Well, for producer Danielle Chip Lehman, for this great song music from David Cook, happy new year to everybody. Thanks to everybody who makes this possible, and we will talk to you all very soon. Take care.